ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्णा।
हरे कृष्णा।
टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम Canto 5, Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is entitled Rishabhdev's Appearance, and today we are on text 18. Tata,
Tata,
Agni Vriye,
Agni Vriye,
Amsha,
Amsha,
Kalaya, Kalaya Vatarishyami,
Kalaya.
आत्मतुल्यम्
आत्मतुल्यम्
अनुपलब्ध भामनः तता
तता
अग्निर्ये
अग्निर्ये
अम्शा
अम्शा
कलयवतरिष्यामि
कलयवतरिष्यामि
आत्मतुल्यम्
आत्मतुल्यम्
अनुपलब्ध भामनः
अनुपलब्ध
तता
तता
अग्निर्ये
अग्निर्ये
अम्शा
अम्शा
कलयावतरिष्यामि
कलयावतरिष्यामि
आत्मतुल्यम्
आत्मतुल्यम्
अनुपलभामानः
अनुपलभामानः।
The vocative is quite hard. You can try to this.
तता
तता
अग्निर्ये
अग्निर्ये
अम्शा
अम्शा
कलयावतरिष्यामि
आत्मतुल्यम् आत्मतुल्यम्
अनुपलाभामनः
अनुपलाभामनः। तता अग्निर्ये अम्शा कलया वतरिष्यामि आत्मतुल्यम् अनुपलभामनः तता अग्निर्ये अम्शा कलया वतरिष्यामि आत्मतुल्यम् अनुपलभामनः। वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। तता देखो अग्निर्ये
In the wife of Nabi,
the son of Agnitra, Amsha Kalaya, by an expansion of my personal form, Avatarishyami,
I shall avenge myself,
Atmatulyam,
my
equal,
Anupalabhamanaha,
not finding. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus avenge myself in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnitra. Purport. This is an example of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although He is one without a second, He expands Himself by Swamsha, His personal expansion, and sometimes by Vibhinamsha, or His separated expansion. Lord Vishnu herein agrees to send His personal expansion as the son of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, who is the son of Agnitra. The Ritvija, the priests, knew that God is one, yet they prayed for the Supreme Lord to become the son of Maharaj Nabi, to let the world know that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is one without a second. When He incarnates, He expands Himself in different potencies. Om Ajnanadhirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Tadamaniyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Yoga Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So today we are reading from Canto 3, which is Rishabhdev's appearance. Sorry, Canto 5, Chapter 3, which is Rishabhdev's appearance. We are continuing the conversation that has just started between the priests and Maharaj Nadi and his wife Meru Devi are also present in that assembly. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead has now appeared in that assembly and he's talking to all the priests, and obviously to Maharaj Nadi and Meru Devi are also listening. So this chapter brings out the exalted position. I was just reading the chapter further, and even in the previous verses, it's bringing out the exalted position of Maharaj Nadi and his wife Meru Devi. Because we are seeing over here that the Lord is assuring in this particular verse especially that he is going to incarnate soon as Rishabhdev. Now, if we read further the activities of Rishabhdev, we will come to know, and even Prabhupada mentions it in the purport, that the whole sect of Jainism has come from Rishabhdev. And Rishabhdev is the emblem of austerity, how like tapasya and austerity, very severe austerity and tapasya. Rishabhdev, that is the example Rishabhdev sets for the world. So this is the Lord himself who is going to appear in the womb of Meru Devi, and that brings out the exalted position of Maharaj Nadi and Meru Devi, that the Lord is agreeing to incarnate as their son. Because the Lord, we know, he can give material opulence to whoever wants. Somebody wants good health, somebody wants... Everybody goes with different desires to the Lord. A kama sarva kama va. So everyone has, somebody desires liberation. So all these things the Lord gives very easily. But the Lord doesn't give his love and trust very easily to devotees unless he has complete faith in those devotees. And therefore we see the Vrajvasis are such exalted devotees because the Lord trusts them, and therefore he becomes their son, or therefore he becomes their lover, and they, you know, clap their hands and he dances at the clapping of their hands. The Vrajvasis make them dance, just we say in Hindi, Isharo pe nachate hain. They are making him dance at the tip of their fingertips. And that is because there is so much trust the Lord reposes and faith the Lord reposes in them. So in the same way, this brings out the exalted position of these two personalities, Maharaj Nadi and Meru Devi as well. Because unless the Lord trusts them, why would the Lord appear in the womb of Nadi, of Meru Devi, through King Nadi? So that is one aspect we can see over here. The other aspect we can see in this particular section and in the whole chapter is also the exalted position of Brahmanas. So yesterday, like Sri Chaitanya Prabhu was so nicely explaining the different Brahmanas who have been mentioned in throughout the Bhagavatam, that all the 12 cantos of Bhagavatam, and how they have so much potency. That is what we see over here as well. So in the previous verse also we see the Lord is mentioning, the Lord is glorifying the position of the Brahmanas. And the Lord is saying that and Prabhupada is explaining in the purport as well, that the Brahmins are the mouth of the Lord. So any offering that is done in a yajna or any ceremony, all that offering is accepted through the Brahmins, because the Brahmins are the mouth of Lord Vishnu. So therefore we say, you know, and especially, you know, any ceremonies that we do, or if there's somebody's first death anniversary is there, or birthday is there, like we see, generally we like to see Brahmins, especially Vaishnava Brahmins, because then we know that the Lord is getting pleased, because the Lord eats through these Brahmins, since they are their mouth, that's what the Lord is proclaiming. And you know that therefore we also have heard this famous slogan sort of a thing, that Brahmana Bhojana Priya. So Brahmins like to eat bhojan, they like to eat different varieties of foodstuffs. And it is good to feed them these foodstuffs, obviously qualified Brahmins, it is good to feed them these foodstuffs, because we can understand that if the Brahmin is pleased through the bhojan, the Lord is definitely getting pleased, like we see in this section, the Lord glorifying the position of the Brahmanas. And these Brahmins were very potent. They were not ordinary Brahmins. In fact, Prabhupada compares these Brahmins to actually Devatas. Because in the earlier days, when you know Maharaj Yudhishthir, all of them also used to do yagyas, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, they used to appear in their yagyas, or when Maharaj Prithu did yagyas. So Prabhupada is comparing that these Brahmins are as potent as demigods. Because when they have called for the Lord to appear, the Lord has actually appeared in their sacrifice. The Lord would not, you know, ordinarily appear if the sacrifice was not performed properly, if all the mantras were not chanted properly. And the main thing is there was no purity in these Brahmins' heart. So that is another thing we can see over here, you know, as the context to today's verse, is that the Lord is very pleased with these Brahmins' offerings and with these Brahmins' prayers. And just as a reciprocation with these Brahmins, the Lord has decided to appear in front of all of these Brahmins and Maharaj Nadi and Meri Devi. So even we see that the Lord says over in the previous verse that He was so pleased, and He's saying that I cannot let the words of my Brahmins, my exalted devotee Brahmins, go waste at all. So we know that Lord, when we pray to Lord Krishna also, the famous shloka is there, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Char. So the cows as well as the Brahmins are very dear to Lord Krishna, and He is very dear to both of them. So anything, any aparad we do to Brahmins also, the Lord doesn't like it at all. And anything which the Brahmins request of the Lord is very eager to satisfy those Brahmins' requests. And that is what we see the Lord doing over here. Completely satisfying the Brahmins' request by appearing. Not only by appearing, the Brahmins have requested that my Lord, can you please appear as the son of Maharaj Nadi and Meru Devi, because they have been doing tapasya for such a long time and they desire to have you as their son or someone like you as the son. And that is what the Lord is now going to satisfy, because the Brahmins are so exalted and pure. So if the Brahmin says something, the Lord is definitely going to uphold him. And the Lord is now promising over here in today's verse, He's saying that, yes, I cannot find anyone equal to me, because the Brahmins have prayed someone like you or someone equal to you. Let that personality appear in the womb of Meru Devi. So the Lord is saying, I cannot find anyone equal to me. So I will personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus come into her womb. And that is what is Rishabhdevi. It's a personal plenary expansion of the Lord. So Prabhupada explains in the purport something about the Lord's expansions. And that is called as Swamsha and Vipinamsha. So what does Swamsha mean? And this, you know, all these aspects of the Lord's expansions have very nicely been explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There is further, like a very scientific explanation given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Like if anyone is interested, there is also Tadekatma expansions. Then there is Vaibhav Vilas, Prakash Vilas. Like there are different types of categories of expansions of the Lord. But here we are talking about the two main expansions of the Lord, which are called as Swamsha and Vipinamsha. So the word Amsha means part and parcel, like a portion. That is the meaning of the word Amsha. So when we say Swamsha, and this is all from the Varaha Purana as well, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is quoted that Varaha Purana explains about all these expansions of the Lord. So Swamsha means myself, Swa means myself. So Swa Amsha means myself, or I will personally come as a plenary portion, or I will personally incarnate as myself into the womb of Maharaj Nadi and Meru Devi. So that is the Lord. The Lord Himself is Swamsha. So Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita purports, where this is nicely explained. Prabhupada says that Swamsha is all Swamshas are Vishnu Tattvas. And they are the Lord Himself, and they are Vibhu. Because it's Vishnu Tattva, they are Vibhu. They are omnipotent and they are huge. Vibhu means unlimited. Whereas Vibhin Amsha, so Amsha again, like I said, is portion, and Vibhin means separated portions. So Vibhin Amsha is the Jivas. That is the Jiva Tattva category, which is all of us. So all of us are expansions of the Lord, like Prabhupada explains again and again, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to explain Achintya Bheda Bhed Tattva. So we are all expansions of the Lord. We do carry minute qualities of the Lord in very, very minute form, but we are separated forms of the Lord. So therefore we are called as Vipinamsha. And therefore we are Anu, because we are minute part and parcel of the Lord, we are Anu, whereas the Lord is Vibhu. The Lord is Master, whereas our position, the Jiva's position, is none other than being servants of that Vibhu or of that Swamsha. So the Swamshas do not have, again Prabhupada further elucidates, that the Swamsha are personal expansions of the Lord and they do not have any other separate desire. They are very aligned with the Lord's desire. They don't have absolutely any separate desire from the Lord. Whereas the Vibhinamsha, which is the Jiva Tattvas, they do have separate desire from the Lord. And because they have separate desire from the Lord, they have this tendency to get entrapped by Maya. Again, you know, they have separate desire from the Lord, plus they are Anu, very, very minute, so they can get easily entrapped by Maya. That is one quality of Jiva Tattva or the Vibhinamsha. So that is the difference which Prabhupada brings out about between Swamsha and Vibhinamsha. That Swamsha is non-different from Krishna and Vibhinamsha are separated parts and parcels of Krishna. And they actually can get entrapped by Maya, whereas Swamsha is the Lord Himself. They will not get entrapped by Maya at all. In fact, they are the controllers of Maya. That is what the Lord explains. So Swamshas are actually divinities. They are the Lord's personal expansions who are endowed with all the qualities of the Lord. And you know, they are Purna Bhagwan. They are all Purna Bhagwan, endowed with all the divinities and all the qualities of the Lord. Whereas Vibhinamsha have very minute quality of the Lord, like we said. So they are all full and absolute potencies. They are Sarva Shakti Sampan. The Swamshas are called as Sarva Shakti Sampan as well. And they are completely aligned with Krishna's desire. Now some of the examples of Swamshas, which is again described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is that the Chaturvyuha expansion of the Lord. So from Krishna, like we know in the spiritual world, from Krishna, Lord Balaram comes. So Krishna is Swayam Bhagwan and Balaram is Swamsha. He is a personal expansion of the Supreme Personality of God, or Godhead. And then from him, all these Chaturvyuhas are coming. And the Purusha avatars, Leela avatars, Manvantaras, all these are coming. So these are all Swamsha expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vibhinamsha is even the demigods, like Jivas, like I said. But even the demigods, all of them fall under the category of Vibhinamsha. But the Vibhinamsha can have different gradations of the Lord's qualities. So like Brahma is also Vibhinamsha, he is also Jiva Tattva, but he has much higher potency of the Lord than ordinary conditioned soul like me would have. Or Lord Shiva, we know Shiva Tattva is a completely different Tattva, but he also will have different potencies of the Lord as compared to normal Jiva Tattva who are the Vibhinamsha of the Lord. So this is what is the explanation given, which Prabhupada is explaining about Swamsha and Vibhinamsha in this particular purport. But the Lord over here is assuring to the Brahmanas. And in the next verse we will see that Meru Devi and Nadi are also standing and listening to this entire conversation. That I will come as, you know, I will come as Swamsha. He is not saying that a Vibhinamsha which will be, you know, invested with my potencies will appear. He is saying I will personally appear. So Lord Rishabhdev is a Swamsha expansion of the Lord. He personally has appeared, has expanded as Rishabhdev and appeared in the womb of Meru Devi. And thus he has satisfied not only the priests, but he has also satisfied King Nadi and Meru Devi. So some of these Vibhinamshas, sometimes when they get expanded from the Lord, they are invested with the Lord's potencies. The Lord might want to achieve something through them. And therefore the Lord might invest extra potency in some of the Vibhinamshas. And the classic example is Devatas, the demigods. They are invested with much more potencies than ordinary Jivas, because that way they can then carry out some orders of the Lord. So like that, the Lord invests lots of potencies in some of Vibhinamsha, and we will move on to discuss the appearance day of Madhavacharya. Today is the appearance day of Madhavacharya. So he was one such Vibhinamsha who was a Jiva Tattva, because he is an incarnation of Vayu God, he is an expansion of Bhima and Hanuman. But he was invested with the Lord's potencies so that he could carry out the mission for which the Lord had sent him to this particular material world. So the next few minutes we will dwell on the life of Madhvacharya, whose appearance date is today, and he is part of one of the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. So Prabhupada and even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to lay lot of importance on discussing the life and the glories of personalities on their appearance day. Because Prabhupada always used to say that on their appearance day, these personalities are very merciful. They bestow a lot of blessings. So if we do have smaranam of their glories, we discuss their life story and pray to them, they are in a very merciful mood and they bestow their blessings on us. And if we see in Mayapur also, when we go to the Gauriya Math, which had been established by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we see all these, you know, the four Vaishnava, the main acharyas of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, they are murtis or their deities are there. When we do parikrama of the temple, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives so much importance to the Vaishnava acharyas who came in these four Vaishnava Sampradayas. So we'll discuss a little bit about the life of Madhvacharya today. So he appeared in 1238 AD. In the year, some people say he appeared in 1139, some people say he appeared in 1238 AD. And he appeared in Karnataka, in the south, southern part of India, in a place called Karnataka. And that area is also known as Parshuram Kshetra. So there is a very nice pastime. I was during Purushottam month, I'm not sure if all of you are aware, but there was, I think it's Chopati Temple or Govardhan Eco Village, they conducted online Tirth Yatra for 30 days, which is really nice. Like every day, one Tirtha place, they were speaking about, different speakers were speaking about that. So one of the speakers spoke about Udupi Kshetra, and that time he explained about this whole, how Parshuram Kshetra came into being. But that Parshuram Kshetra is where, you know, this Kannada district is there, or the south, the Karnataka is there. So that area is also known as Parshuram Kshetra. And this was created by Parshuram when he was there, and he threw his Parshu in one particular direction, and where the Parshu landed, that whole place became Parshuram Kshetra. And he blessed that place, that this place will always be abundant with natural resources. So that place also has Lord Parshuram's blessings on it. And within this Parshuram Kshetra or Karnataka, there is a place called Udupi, which is now very famous. During Madhvacharya's time, it was also famous, but now it is very famous because Madhvacharya has now established the Udupi Krishna temple over there. So the holy place of Udupi is there, and close to Udupi, there is a small village which is called as Pajak Kshetra. And in that particular village, Madhvacharya appeared. So very close to Udupi, he appeared. And there was a Brahmin who used to live over there, whose name was Madhya Deha Bhatta. And his wife was also there, who used to live with him. And both of them were very pious, very, very pious people, very religious. The bride, he was a good preacher as well, Madhya Deha Bhatta. He used to give discourses and all. And by profession, he was, I think, a farmer. He had bullocks and all that and some agricultural land. So that was his occupation. So they both had a deep desire. They both had a deep desire to have a son. They already had two sons, but both of the sons had died at infancy itself. So they were very distressed because they lost two sons. They did have one daughter, but they had already lost two sons. And they were feeling very distressed because during those days it was very important that you have someone to carry forward your lineage. There should be someone who will do Pindadan, who will do Shraddh for you. Otherwise, you will not be able to ascend to Pitru Loka if you don't have a son to do all these things. So, they were very desirous to have a son. They were quite distressed when they lost two of their infant sons. So, every day, it is described that Madhya Deha Bhatta and his wife, they did so much tapasya just to get a son. And for 12 years, their tapasya lasted. And what tapasya they used to do was, every day for 12 years, they would walk from Pajaka Kshetra, where they lived, to Udupi. And in Udupi, there were two famous temples at that time. There was the Ananteshwara temple and there was Chandramouli temple. So Madhya Deha Bhatta used to every time go to Ananteshwara temple, and he used to pray with folded hands in a very prayerful mood. He used to, like, you know, drawing similarities between what's happening in this section of the Bhagavatam and over here. Here also we see Maharaj Nabhi and Meru Devi were wanting a son, and they are doing tapasya, and they are doing the right form of tapasya to get the Lord as their son. And over here also we see that Madhya Deha Bhatta and his wife wanted a son, and they are doing the right, they are praying Akama Sarva Kamova. Again, they are praying to the Supreme Lord Ananteshwara to get a son. So Madhya Deha Bhatta actually used to pray to Ananteshwara that, oh my Lord, please send me a son who will not just to carry on my lineage, but who will be so powerful that he will spread your glories in this world. He will be there, he will come here to just establish the right type of dharma. So these were the prayers which Madhyagriha Bhatta used to do when he used to go to the Ananteshwara temple. And he used to fast, like, you know, every day he used to fast, then go to Rupi, pray in Ananteshwara temple, you know, tell the pujari to offer some offering to the Lord, and then he would come back home. So this was his daily routine for 12 years, just praying intensely for a son who will not only, you know, do shraddh for him and help him to go to the Pitruloka, but who will also serve humanity. That was his prayer. So once the pujari, at the end of 12 years, the pujari came out of the altar and he told Madhyagriha Bhatta that I have received an indication from the Lord today that very soon he is going to send a very powerful personality to appear in the womb of your wife. So you know, you are very blessed that the Lord has listened to your prayers. You did this tapasya for 12 years and now the Lord is happy to send someone who will answer your prayers and who will serve humanity as well. And in answer to Madhyagriha Bhatta's prayers, the Lord sent his empowered representative, who is none other than Vayudev, to appear in the womb of the wife of Madhyagriha Bhatta. So Vayudev appeared and he was born. So this son was born on the day of Vijayadashmi. Today, actually, well, yesterday in India they celebrated Vijayadashmi. We received so many Dashera, happy Dashera messages. But actually yesterday in Melbourne it was Navami. Today it is Vijayadashmi. So we are also celebrating the holy festival of Ramchandra Vijayotsam, when Lord Ram obviously had a victory over the evil King Ravana. So on this wonderful day of Vijayadashmi, Madhavacharya was born. So when he was born, he was named as Vasudev by his parents. And he was born very, very beautiful child with very beautiful qualities and very strong physique. Because he is none other than Vayudev, obviously, he is the son of Vayudev. And therefore he is none other than Hanuman and Bhima. So Hanuman, who appeared in Lord Ram's pastimes, and Bhima, who appeared in Krishna's pastimes. Both of them were children of Vayudev, and therefore it is said that Madhvacharya is an expansion. He is non-different from Bhima and Hanuman. And all the villagers were very happy because they knew Madhyagriha Bhatta had done this tapasya for 12 years. They were all very close with Brahmin community. And Madhyagriha Bhatta and his wife were very dear to that community. So the whole village was rejoicing when the little Vasudev was born. Everyone was rejoicing. There was a nice festival. Everyone came to bless the child because he looked so divine even when he was a little child. So, some of the childhood pastimes of Madhvacharya. So, he was born and he is the son of Vayudev, expansion of Bhima. Obviously, he likes to eat a lot. So, when he was very young also, like an infant, he was always hungry. Continuously, he would be hungry and continuously his mother had to feed him her milk. Once she had fed the milk, she would keep him down for some time, again he would get hungry. Again she would feed him milk, again she would keep him down, like continuously the child used to be hungry. So it is mentioned that almost for 6 months the mother could not go step out of the house at all. Because even if she goes anywhere, the child will get hungry, who will feed the child? So she used to continuously be by the side of Vasudev and she used to feed him. But one day when he was 6 months old, she had to go out to, you know, do some work. So there was no choice but to leave little Vasudev in the cradle. So she fed him, left him in the cradle, he was sleeping, and she told their daughter, because they had a little daughter. So she told the daughter, you look after your little brother while I quickly finish some work and come. And she left the house, and as soon as she left the house, Vasudev got up and he started crying. And the little girl didn't know what to do. She tried to rock the cradle. She was, you know, doing cuckoo ka and all that. She was trying to pacify the baby, but the baby kept crying and crying and crying. And she kept running to the door to see, is mummy coming, and running back to Vasudev telling, wait, mummy will come soon. She didn't know what to do at all. Obviously, she is a little child, so she didn't know what to do. And then ultimately, because of the mum was not coming, she couldn't see her anywhere in the horizon. So what she did, there was, because they were, by occupation, they were farmers, they had agricultural land, and there were some grain bags, gunny bags lying over there, inside which there were grains meant to feed all the bullocks. The bulls and the cows in the fields of this Madhyagriha Bhatta. So this girl did not know what to do. She doesn't know if an infant should not be fed certain types of foodstuffs. So she just took Vasudev out. She kept him near the grains and she gave him a few grains to eat. And Vasudev, he's an infant, 6-7 months old baby, but he ate all the grains which she gave. And she saw, oh, he got pacified by eating this grain. So she gave him more grains. She didn't realize that infants can get indigestion, like they can't digest all this. That too, raw grains. Even we can't digest raw grain. And she's giving all that to the infant just to keep him pacified. So baby Vasudev nicely sat there, and you know, this little girl, she then became busy because the brother is not crying, so she went off to play. And then when the mom and dad came back, they saw that there is no child in the cradle. So the mom asked her, where is the child? I had asked you to look after Vasudev. Where is he gone? And she said, oh, he was eating some grains. He was crying so much. You took such a long time to come. I didn't know what to give him. He was so hungry. So I gave him some grains, and he's happily eating the grains now. So the mom rushed to where the grains had been kept, and Vasudev had finished all the 40 kilos. There were 40 kilos of grains, and he had finished all the 40 kilos of grains. And the mom was shocked to see that the little baby has finished all the 40 kilos of grains, and she thought something is going to happen. He's going to fall sick. He's going to get indigestion. We'll have to rush him to the Vaidya, to the doctor for some treatment. But Vasudev was completely happy, nicely playing. Nothing at all happened to him. Because he is none other than Bhima. He could digest whatever was given to him. So this is one of the childhood pastimes where, you know, he was showing that he has a strong physique and an insatiable hunger like Bhima always had. One of the other pastimes was his father, you know, had his business was not going really well. The farming, there was a drought that year. Not many crops had grown and all that. So he had actually bought a bullock from one of the money lenders. And he was not able to repay the price of the bullock because that year he did not get enough crops to repay the money lender. So he had not been able to repay. The money lender kept reminding him, you have to repay my debt, you have to repay my debt, give me the money for the bullock that I gave you. And Madhyadeha kept telling him sweet words, but he could not repay. What to do? He didn't have any money. So then what this money lender did, the money lenders came to Madhyadeha's house. Because Madhyadeha Bhatt was not responding to all his requests to repay the money. And he told Madhyadeha Bhatt that I am going to sit outside your house and I am going to fast over here till, even though I have to fast till death, that's fine, till you repay me my debt. So now Madhyadeha Bhatt was in so much dilemma what to do. Because that time still Vedic culture was prevalent, and it is said that if a Brahmin or if a guest is sitting at your doorstep and if he is not eating, the family member should not eat. You should not eat till a guest is there in your house and you haven't fed the guest first. And Madhyadeha Bhatt, being a devout Brahmin, he always used to follow this particular culture. So then he was thinking, what to do? He's not eating, so I also can't eat. So, you know, 2-3 days the whole family fasted because this moneylender is refusing to eat and the family could not eat. So little Vasudev was playing there and he came to his dad, to his father, and he said, father, why are you not eating? So I will also not eat if you are not eating. And the father said, no Vasudev, you are really little, you go and eat, but I have to wait because I am not able to repay this moneylender and he is fasting here till death, he is refusing to eat anything. So Vasudev said, okay, it's only that much, don't worry, I will satisfy this moneylender. So he called this moneylender and he took him into his backyard. And he said, there was a nice tamarind tree which used to grow in Pajakar Kshetra in Vasudev's backyard. And he got up on the tamarind tree, he took a few tamarinds, he took out the seeds and he gave them to this moneylender. He said, here, can you please take them? And the moneylender was so charmed because Vasudev was so, like I said, full of divine qualities, very effulgent face. So the moneylender was very charmed by the whole demeanor of Vasudev. And he took the tamarind seeds in his hand. He saw he's taking tamarind seeds. He could have thought, what is this tamarind seeds going to do? But he still took it because he was charmed by the demeanor and the attitude of Vasudev. And when he took the tamarind seeds in his hand, those tamarind seeds turned into solid gold. And they were the exact amount which Madhyadeha Bhatt owed to this moneylender. So he said, is this enough for you? And the moneylender was very happy because he's getting gold. Not even ordinary money. So he said, yeah, this is enough. And he very happily went to Madhyadeha Bhatt and he said that your son has repaid the debt. So it's fine, I'm going now. You all can all eat. And very happily he went away. So this was one more pastime of little Vasudev where he satisfied the moneylender by converting tamarind seeds into pure gold nuggets. Just to save his father from that, you know, wrath of the moneylender. And then, you know, as a little child, Vasudev was, because he was such a strong, he had such a strong physique, he was always very inclined towards sports. All the time he used to like playing sports with his friends, and his teachers used to keep shouting at him that, Vasudev, if you are all the time going to play sports and games and all that, when are you going to study? And Vasudev had received his Brahmin, like the Brahmin thread, at the age of 5. His father had done that ceremony of Upanayanam Samskar. So he had already received his Brahmin thread, and he had already been induced into the, you know, teaching, the Gurukul or whatever was there at that time. But the teachers used to shout, because all the time he used to play. So the teachers used to come and ask him, Vasudev, when are you going to study? If you are going to play all this time, how will you grow up to be a nice learned scholar? And he used to challenge the teachers. He used to say, no, I know everything. So he used to tell the teachers, okay, quiz me what you all want to ask me. And whenever the teachers used to quiz him, he had answers to all the topics, all the different Vedic topics that were being taught to him. He had answers to everything. So very bright child, very quickly he had learned everything from his teachers. And in fact, it is said he used to actually challenge his teachers. He could find out mistakes, if his teachers are making any mistakes in teaching, and he was able to challenge and correct his teachers as well at such a young age of 5. So all the many scriptures he had already memorized, all the grammar, logic, whatever topics his teachers were teaching, already he had memorized, and he used to happily spend his time playing sports and games with his friends. Because of his strong physique, his inclination was more towards that. In fact, sometimes when his father used to preach, because his father was also a preacher, he used to sit and give classes. And once his father was struggling to remember a particular shloka, and this little child Vasudev was 5, he was sitting in the audience and he reminded his father of the shloka at that time. So that is how his scholarship was in the scriptures. He was able to tell his father which is the correct shloka and from which scripture that shloka had to be quoted. So while he was growing up like this, there was a demon named Maniman, who used to live very close by over there, and that demon had taken the form of a snake. So he used to live as a snake, and huge, he was a huge serpent snake. And once when little Vasudev was playing with his friends, the inclination that he naturally had, this snake actually attacked Vasudev. Because he was a demon, he was, you know, trying to take some revenge from the previous lifetime. So he attacked Vasudev, and as soon as he attacked Vasudev, Vasudev, obviously being the strong person, Hanuman Bhima, he was able to crush the snake just by putting his toe on the head of the snake. Just he put his toe on the head of the snake and the snake got crushed completely. And even today, I was listening in a class, even today that particular stone is there, where the imprint of Vasudev's toe and the snake is there, and people go to take darshan of that particular stone in Pajakshetra. So he killed the snake completely, pulverized the snake just by putting his toe. And because he had been outside for such a long time playing and then, you know, wrestling with the snake and killing him, his mother was getting very worried. And whenever his mother used to be worried, she used to cry, Vasudev, where are you? Where are you? You haven't come home. And he used to, wherever he is, he might be 2 kilometers away, 3 kilometers away, wherever he is, in one jump he would come in front of his mother. And, you know, again proving that he is non-different than Hanuman. So one jump he would come in front of his mother and present himself, and that way he used to satisfy, you know, allay his mother's concerns and fear that the mother had, that where did my child go away. And even in his childhood, sometimes when he was in the assembly or of his friends, or there was some preaching program or something that was going on, he very beautifully and eloquently used to say the stories from Puranas. Beautiful stories he used to say. And no one had taught him those stories. Neither the mom had taught nor the teachers had taught. So sometimes the neighbors and all used to ask him, where did you learn all these stories? We have not taught you, or your mom has not taught you these stories. And very humbly Vasudev had used to reply that, oh, I had learned them all in my previous births. And you know, we see the same response used to come from Lord Nityananda. When Lord Nityananda was a child and he used to play in Eka Chakradham, that time also Lord Nityananda used to involve all his friends in doing all these skits from Ramayana and so many other Puranic stories they used to do skits on. And again the neighbors used to ask him, where did you learn all this? And Lord Nityananda also same thing, in my previous births. In fact, Lord Nityananda was those personalities in his previous birth. But here Vasudev knew all the Purana stories from his previous birth. So when, you know, like this Vasudeva was growing, and by the time he was 10 or 11 years old, he started, because he was, obviously he was an empowered representative of the Lord who had been sent on the earth with a mission. He started feeling very restless, even though his father had done Upanayan Sanskar. He had learned all the scriptures, become very well-versed scholar in all the different aspects of Shastras. He started to feel very restless, because he was seeing the futility of material life. And he was, you know, seeing that, he was also realizing that the human form of life is not just meant for doing your, you know, Varnashram Dharma and then, you know, just going. If you have done devotion to Krishna, you will go back to Godhead, otherwise taking another birth. So he saw the futility of material life, and he saw the futility of human form of life if it was not being utilized properly. And he could see most of the people were just doing that. So he started getting very restless, because he, from inside, he was getting that voice that he wants to establish the true religion, the true tenets of Dharma, teach people about what is the right way, what is the devotion, what is the goal of human form of life. So all those desires started coming in his heart. And therefore he was generally getting disinterested in material life. And he thought, I must seek out a guru who will help me fulfill the goal of human form of life, which is also Athato Brahma Jigyasa. It is not just, you know, doing your occupational duty, serving your family and just staying comfortably in this material world. But finding out, Athato Brahma Jigyasa is finding out who we are, what is our relationship with Brahman. So he wanted to expound these principles, the two principles of Dharma, and because of that he started searching for a guru. And while searching for a guru, he came across the ashram of a very exalted sannyasi called Achyuta Preksha. So this Achyuta Preksha was actually from the Mayavad school of sannyasi, and he had his ashram near Udupi. And little Vasudev was very attractive to Achyuta Preksha, because very austere sannyasi, obviously a transcendentalist, although the philosophy was not right, but he was a transcendentalist, and Vasudev got attracted to him. So by the age of 10 or 11, he would spend long hours and long time with this Achyuta Preksha in his ashram. And here the father and the mother, they started getting very jittery, because they saw he spending such a long time with this Achyuta Preksha. And obviously the father was a Brahmin, he was a preacher. He realized that maybe our son is slowly preparing to go away from family life and maybe take sannyas in the future. So Madhyageha Bhatta was getting very worried, and he had only this one son whom he had obtained after 12 years of tapasya. So he actually went to the ashram or the matha of Achyuta Preksha, and he started requesting his son that, oh Vasudev, please come back home. With sweet words he tried to convince his son to come back home. That please come back home, your mother is missing you, she has prepared nice foodstuffs for you, because he knew Vasudev used to like eating. So with sweet words he tried to convince him, but they all fell on deaf ears. Vasudev was not ready to return home at all. So then, because he was not listening with sweet words, the next astra or the next weapon which Madhyageha Bhatta tried was crying. So he started weeping. He said that we are so old, we are missing you so much, we got you after so many years of tapasya, and we are not coming home, you just left home and you are staying in this ashram, please come home, like that he started crying. Again there was no effect at all on Vasudev. So then, you know, the third astra, the third weapon he started using was of chastisement. And then he started actually, because Vasudev was still 10 years old or something, so he started chastising Vasudev that if you don't come home, you see what will happen, you know, like a father normally chastises a son. So he kept chastising Vasudev as well, but again, everything was falling on deaf ears. Vasudev was completely convinced that he has to stay at the ashram of Achyuta Preksha and perfect his life by taking sannyas. So after that, there was no resort. So then the fourth astra, the fourth weapon which the father used was that threatening or blackmail. So he said, if you don't come home, I am going to commit suicide. And what little Vasudev did was, he took a cloth, he tore it into two pieces, he wore one as a kopin and one as that, top part, top chadar, and, you know, showing that he is wearing a dress of a sannyasi sort of. And he said that, you know, if you want to commit suicide, you go and commit suicide. I am not coming home. So again, the fourth weapon also did not work, of blackmail. So then, he went back home. And also, yeah, before he went back home, Madhyadeha but fell at the feet as the last resort of Vasudeva. And he said, I'm begging you, you please come home, please come back home. Your mother is missing you, your sister is missing you, come back home. So then Vasudeva said, he said that you are also a Brahmin, a learned Brahmin, and you know that one does not fall at the feet of their child unless the child is a sannyasi. So this is a prophecy that you yourself are doing. You have fallen at my feet today even though I am your son. So this is a prophecy which you yourself will, you know, are saying, which will get fulfilled in the future, that I will be a sannyasi. And therefore you are falling at my feet. So Madhyagriha Bhatt got defeated. He had no other thing and he went back home, dejected, to his wife. So then his wife told him, no, even I will come. Let's go and request him, because he is the only one who will do Shraddh for us. Who will do Shraddh for us? Who will do Pindadan for us if we die? Who will do that Agni Deha for our funeral when we die? So like that, that was the next thing which the parents started doing to Vasudeva. They came back and they're saying, we have only one son and you have to do all these things for us when we get old and we die. Who will do all that? And who will look after us in our old age if you go away and take sannyas? So then Vasudeva's heart softened a little bit, because his mother was also requesting like that. So he said, okay, if you all are so concerned about your old age and who will do Agni Deha, who will do Pindadan and all that, I assure you that if you all will get a son, another son very soon. And Madhyagriha Bhatt and his wife, imagine, they had already lost two sons. They did 12 years tapasya, then they got Vasudeva. And now he's already 10-12 years old. So they were already quite old by that time, probably 40s, 50s or something. And they said that, no, we are old, how can we get a son now, at this age? And Vasudeva said, but you all promise me, if you all get a son, you all will allow me to take sannyas. So then, you know, the parents had no choice, but they had to agree. So next year, by, you know, again, blessings of Vasudeva and the miracle which he did, he actually, they were blessed and they got a son. And as soon as they got a son, he came to take blessings from his parents. And he said, now you all have to give me blessings that I will take sannyas. But again, mother's heart is mother's heart. She was not giving blessings to Vasudev to take sannyas. So this time when Vasudev had to threaten, he said that if you give me blessings and that way I take sannyas, at least I will come to see you sometimes. If you don't give me blessings, I will still take sannyas, but I will not come to see you at any time. So then there was no choice. The mother had to give blessings. Very half-heartedly she gave her blessings to little Vasudev, and she said, okay, you can go and take sannyas. And there was a beautiful ceremony that was conducted in Ananteshwara temple. That is where Vasudeva Madhvacharya's sannyas ceremony happened. So he was exactly 12 years old by then. And there was a nice ceremony which happened when, you know, he gave up all his nice robes that he used to wear. And he donned the robes of a sannyasi. And Achyuta Preksha gave him that danda to hold as a sannyasi. So there was a beautiful ceremony that happened. And during sannyas, he was given the name of Purna Pragna. That is the name which his Guru Maharaj gave him. And after he became a sannyasi, obviously he wanted to fulfill the mission for which he had come to this earth planet. So he started doing very strong preaching. He started not only in Udupi Kshetra, but he also started traveling. Because during that time, Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy was very strongly still prevalent in the south of India and even in the other parts of India, but especially in the south of India. Very strongly prevalent Shankaracharya's philosophy was there. So he started strongly preaching against Mayavad philosophy. And also there were some tenets of Buddhism which were also still present, which was Nirvishesha Shunyavad. That was the tenets of Buddhism which many people believe in. And Mayavadis, you know, we can become God, we are, you know, all those hogus-pogus philosophy which was present of Shankaracharya. So he very strongly established, Madhvacharya's philosophy was Dvaitavad. Very strongly he established the aspect of dualism. Because obviously Shankaracharya's philosophy was monism, that we and God are one. But he strongly preached against that philosophy and established Dvaitavad, which is dualism, which is the Lord is separate, he is supreme, no one can become the Lord. And we are jiva tattvas, we are separate, we can never become the Lord, we will always stay the servant of the Lord. So that's the duality he wanted to establish firmly. And the role of the jiva is to serve the supreme Lord whom he can never become. This is the philosophy which Madhvacharya started strongly preaching throughout the south of India. So he started preaching to them that the Lord has an eternal form. He lives in the spiritual world, because the Mayavadis would say that, oh, this Brahman sometimes comes and the Lord becomes entrapped by Maya. So whatever form is there over here is actually a manifestation because he has come into Maya, and then it again, you know, goes away. So that is what is the Mayavad philosophy, and you can also become that particular form. But he said, no, the Lord is supreme. He has an eternal form. He lives in the spiritual world in Vaikuntha planet, and we are completely separate from him, and we have to serve the Lord. That is what he strongly started teaching. So the goal of life, he started telling people, is to develop devotion. The Lord is supreme and eternal, and the goal of life of a jiva is to develop devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everyone was surrendering, like, you know, with this strong preaching that he was doing, everyone was surrendering. There used to be debates as well with some of the Shankara scholars, because he was 12, 13 years old, and some of the Shankarites were getting quite jittery with his strong preaching, because they were saying most of them are converting now from monistic philosophy to dualism, the Dvaitavad philosophy. So they were getting quite jittery, and they used to hold debates with little Vasudeva, Purna Pragna, that his name was at that time. And during those debates, very easily, Madhavacharya used to defeat all the Shankara philosophers as well, and they had no choice but to surrender at the lotus feet of Madhavacharya. So like that, he was preaching throughout the south of India, and so many people were becoming his disciples. So many were surrendering to his lotus feet and becoming his disciples. And Achyuta Preksha was, although he himself was a monastic sannyasi, he was very proud, because he was very attached to Madhvacharya. So he was very proud that his disciple is doing so much preaching and so many people are surrendering to him just with a view of doing, you know, eternally worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Achyuta Preksha wanted to actually do a huge ceremony where, you know, just as a king does, when a king retires, he wants to coronate his son as the prince. Like that, Achyuta Preksha also wanted to have a huge ceremony where he would actually coronate Madhvacharya as the leader. So he conducted that youth ceremony in Udupi and he gave him the name. He declared him as the leader of that particular ashram or the math, and that time he gave him the name Ananda Tirtha. So his birth name was Vasudev, his sannyas name was Purna Pragna, and when he had been coronated as the leader of the math, Achyuta Preksha gave him one more name called as Ananda Tirtha. But that time people also used to call him Madhva. They used to call him Madhava, because Madhava is the eternal form of the Lord, and they saw he's propagating so much of devotion to Lord Krishna. So Madhava is one of the names of Lord Krishna, and that is the name which Madhavacharya himself used to like, because it is the name of Lord Krishna, and therefore he preferred to be called by that name, and that's how the name Madhavacharya then stuck with him. But his guru had given him the name of Ananda Tirtha as well during that time. So during these debates and all that that he used to do with these Shankarite philosophers, once two Shankara philosophers tried to do debate, he defeated them easily. But the Shankara philosopher said that you are doing all these debates, but what is the scriptural basis you have? Because Shankaracharya has written a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, and that commentary talks about monism, obviously Advaitavad. But where is your commentary on the Bhagavad Gita which people can read and get convinced about Dvaitavad? So because you haven't written a commentary, you should accept Shankara's commentary of the Bhagavad Gita. And that time Madhavacharya realized that maybe it is time for him to write a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. But before he wrote the commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, he thought he must take blessings from the original compiler of the Bhagavad Gita, which is part of the Mahabharata, which was compiled by none other than Vedavyas. So he and some of his very select disciples, they went on foot from Udupi. From Udupi Kshetra, they went on foot till Badrikashram. Because obviously he had heard that Vedavyas eternally resides in Kali Yuga. He does not leave this material world, Vedavyas. He is still there in the Himalayas, in Badrikashram. So they all walked to the temple of Badrikashram, and the disciples were standing outside. And that time Madhavacharya had started writing a few verses of the commentary on a few verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So they could hear Madhavacharya having this dialogue with Lord Vishnu in the temple. And he was telling that, here my Lord, I have written a few verses, you please accept and you please tell me if they are okay or not. And they could hear the Lord talking to Madhavacharya, all his disciples from outside. And the Lord was telling Madhavacharya that, I bless you that your commentary will be perfect and it will spread dualism and it will establish me firmly as the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead in this world. So they could hear this dialogue. So once he got blessings in the Badri Kashram, in the temple at Badri Kashram, then he wanted to go to a place called Adi Badri, it's called. That is where Vedavyas is said to be residing with all his followers. So then he started walking to Adi Badri. One of his disciples called as Satyatirtha, this disciple always used to be there with Madhvacharya. And he said, no, because he used to be the scribe, he used to write when Madhvacharya used to dictate the commentary. So he also walked with him, but they had to walk days and days in that cold and the snow-filled mountains of Himalayas, and they had still not reached Adi Badri. And Satyatirtha was getting very tired and exhausted because they were not eating any food also on the way. So then Madhvacharya looked back and saw that his disciple is getting tired. So he told Satyatirtha, you go back. And Satyatirtha said, no, my lord, I have always been next to you. And you know, if you're going to sit and write the, speak the commentary of Bhagavad Gita under Vedavyas, I want to be there to scribe it for you. But he saw, Madhvacharya saw Satyatirtha was not able to come keep up. So because he's Vayudev, he just did like one, you know, one, with one hand gesture, like, you know, sending some force. And Satyatirtha went miles and miles back where all the other disciples were waiting. Just by the carriage of the strong current of the wind, he was carried away. And then Madhvacharya went ahead and he reached Adi Badri and he had the beautiful darshan of Vedavyas, who was sitting there surrounded by all his disciples. So he surrendered at his lotus feet. He actually, you know, sat and learned how to do the whole commentary of Bhagavad Gita. Vedavyas blessed him and then he returned with the commentary of the Bhagavad Gita. So that therefore we see that in the disciplic succession, when even Prabhupada writes, although Madhvacharya's guru was Achyuta Preksha, his sannyas guru was Achyuta Preksha, but he always considered his guru as Vedavyas, because he directly took teachings or he directly learned under the shelter of Vedavyas in Adi Badri Ashram. So that is how we see the disciplic succession also being mentioned by Srila Prabhupada. So he came back with his commentary, and once he came back with his commentary, he started preaching very strongly from the commentary that he had written about Dvaitavar, how this Lord is supreme and how jivas have to do devotion and serve the Lord as a servant. So once while he was with his disciples on the shores of Udupi, there's a beautiful beach on Udupi called Malpe Beach, and he was on that shore of that ocean, and there was a huge storm that had come at that time. And he saw in the far distance there was a boat which was rocking because of the storm, and it was getting stuck in that sand or, you know, whatever, but it was getting stuck and it was not able to come to the shore safely. So Madhvacharya, none other than Vayudev, he waved his cloth, his uttarya, his upper cloth, and he stopped the storm. He was able to stop the storm, and then he was able to guide the boat safely to come on the shore. And the owner of this boat was a very rich businessman, and he was carrying lots and lots of valuable goods. So his ship was going to get wrecked and it was going to completely get smashed in the storm, but somehow because of Madhvacharya giving direction and stopping the storm, it was able to safely come. So he was very grateful to Madhvacharya, and he expressed his gratitude by saying that, I have so many valuable goods in this ship, you please pick up whatever you want. Because without you, actually everything would have just been lost to the ocean. My ship would have got wrecked. But you have saved my ship, so you pick up whatever you want. And then Madhvacharya asked him that, which direction are you coming from? And he said, oh, we are coming from Dwarka. That's what the owner of the ship said. So then Madhvacharya said, do you have, because he knew Gopi Chandan is famous in Dwarka. So he said, do you have any Gopi Chandan in your ship? Because I'm a sannyasi, I don't want any other goods that are there in your ship. And the owner said that, yes, we have a huge block of Gopi Chandan in the ship, which we had kept for balancing of the ship. So it's of no use to me anyway. Do you want that Gopi Chandan? And he said, yes, please, I would like to have that Gopi Chandan. So then 30 people went on the ship to bring that block of Gopi Chandan, but it was so heavy that none of them were able to lift it. And they were not able to carry it off the boat. And then Madhvacharya told all of them, okay, y'all sit, I will go and bring that block and come. And being Bhima, he went on the ship, single-handedly he picked up that block of Gopi Chandan and he walked out of the ship. And he started walking towards Udupi from that beach where he found this Gopi Chandan from the owner of the boat. And while he was walking, the Gopi Chandan actually fell because the Lord wanted to manifest. And it broke open, then there was a beautiful deity of Krishna which came out of that Gopi Chandan block. And that deity of Krishna was in the Bal Gopal form of Krishna. Krishna was carrying a stick which was Mother Yashoda's churning stick, the stick she used to churn butter. And in one hand there was also, you know, a rope, cowherding rope, and in one hand there was butter in that particular deity's hand. It was a beautiful deity. So Madhavacharya took that deity, he actually established, he told all his disciples that the Lord has himself come to accept our worship. So he established a beautiful temple of Udupi Krishna. And it's not as grand as Srirangam temple and all that, but it's a very beautiful temple which he established with high standard of worship. So he had 8 primary sannyasi disciples, and all these 8 disciples take turns. I think every 2 years the sannyas disciple changes. So 2 years everybody serves this deity in rotation. And that is how he established the worship of Udupi Krishna. And even today we go, they have high standard of worship. Like since morning, like since Mangala time, they start doing different seva for the Lord till Shayanarti, when they put the Lord to sleep. And there's a beautiful pastime about the origin of this particular deity. So when Krishna was in Dwarka, Mother Devaki was talking to Krishna once. And she told him that, you know, as soon as you were born, you just told us, gave us the instruction to me and your father Vasudev that we should take you to Golok and we should leave you there to Gokul. And that's what we did. So I could not see your childhood form at all, which Mother Yashoda enjoyed. And I have heard so much about your childhood form, how you used to eat butter, how you used to play with your friends. But I could never see that form, neither I could, you know, feed that form or do any reciprocation or pastimes with that form. So Devaki requested Krishna, can you please manifest and show me that form, your childhood form, which was so loved by all the Vrajvasis and especially by Mother Yashoda. So just to satisfy Mother Devaki's desire, Krishna actually showed him that form, where he is standing with Mother Yashoda's churning stick and, you know, he is eating butter, he is doing the cowherding pastime. So this form he showed to Mother Devaki to satisfy her motherly desire to see him in his childhood form. And when he showed that form to Devaki, Rukmini Devi was also present over there. And when Rukmini Devi saw that form, she was completely charmed. Because she had always seen Krishna in his adult form. Like, you know, he was her husband. So she had seen him as a prince, as a, you know, opulently dressed. She had always seen him in his Aishwarya form. But when she saw this little baby form, she was completely charmed. And then she requested Krishna, she said, I have to have this deity, this form of yours with me to worship all the while. And then Krishna requested Vishwakarma to make a beautiful deity form of that form that he had shown to Mother Devaki. And it is said that Rukmini Devi, till from that time onwards, she worshipped that form of Krishna throughout her life. So this form of Krishna, which, you know, Madhavacharya has established in Udupi, is actually the original deity which Rukmini Devi used to worship and which was crowned by Vishwakarma himself, seeing at that form, original form of Krishna. So once Rukmini Devi had worshipped the deity, we know how Dwarka got submerged under the water and all the Dwarka Vasis went back to the spiritual world. So that time this deity got lost in what is called as a Gopi Talab in Dwarka. And he got, you know, entrapped in that block of Gopi Chandan, and that is how then that deity came to accept worship of Madhavacharya. So this is the origin of that particular deity. Now if we see, just, you know, talking about our sampradaya and, you know, our connection with Madhavacharya. So we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation in this particular sampradaya. We know Madhavendra Puri is the link between Madhavacharya and our sampradaya. Madhavendra Puri then exhibited some ecstatic prema of, you know, gopis and all that, and he started that particular sect which, you know, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually propounded as Gaudiya Madhava Sampradaya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation in this sampradaya just to give honor, because he was aligning himself with the philosophy of Madhavacharya, especially the Dvaitavad philosophy which Madhavacharya was teaching. And not only that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came to this world, he actually took 2 teachings from each Vaishnava Sampradaya. So from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, and this has been mentioned by Bhakti Vinod Thakur in the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, when he describes the meeting between Lord Nityananda and Jiva Goswami. Lord Nityananda takes Jiva Goswami on a tour of Navadvip Dham, and at that time Lord Nityananda is describing to Jiva Goswami how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took, you know, what teachings he took from each Sampradaya. So from the Ramanujacharya Sampradaya, which is the Shri Sampradaya, Lord Chaitanya accepted two things. The one was unalloyed devotion, which was completely free from karma and jnana, which was also called as Ananya Bhakti. So that was one principle he took from Shri Sampradaya. And the second one was service to devotees, which is Bhakta Jana Seva. So these are the two principles which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took from the Shri Sampradaya, which, you know, Ramanujacharya was propagating. From the Brahma Madhava Sampradaya, which Madhavacharya was propagating, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the two principles. One was complete defeat of Mayavad, which was the main purpose of Madhavacharya coming into this world. So which was Kevala Advaita Nivasana. So he completely defeated Mayavad philosophy. That was one teaching, because we know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also used to strongly teach or preach against Mayavad philosophy. So that was one of the teachings he took from there. And the second teaching he took from there was worship of Krishna deity and understanding that worship, this worship is eternal. So, and which is called as Krishna Murti Sevana. So these are the two teachings he took from Madhava Sampradaya or Brahma Madhava Sampradaya. The third Sampradaya was Rudra Sampradaya, which was propagated by Vishnu Swami. And from that Sampradaya, he took the teaching that total dependence on Krishna, which is Tadiya Sarvasva Bhava. And this particular Sampradaya was then propagated by Vallabhacharya, who was a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who started this whole Vallabh Sampradaya, which is there right now, where they worship Krishna in Vatsalya Bhav. So total dependence on Krishna, Tadiya Sarvasva Bhav. And the second principle he took from Rudra Sampradaya was spontaneous devotional service, which is Raga Marga. So these are the two principles he took from the Rudra Sampradaya. And from the Kumara Sampradaya, which is being propagated by Nimbakacharya, he took two principles. The first one was exclusive shelter of Radhika. So in no other Sampradaya, there is the worship of Radharani, which is there in Nimbarka Sampradaya. So which was also called as Ekanta Radhika Shraya. So that is the principle he took from Kumara Sampradaya. And the second one was exalted mood of the gopis in their worship of Krishna, which is Gopi Bhav. So Radhika's worship, Radharani's worship and Gopi Bhav, these are the two principles he took from the Nimbarka Sampradaya. So this is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu synthesized. And he, even though, you know, we are from the Brahma Madhava Sampradaya, which Madhvacharya has propagated so well, he started a sect called as Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya, because in the Madhava Sampradaya there was the Rasamalayam or Rasa was lacking. So that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to introduce, and that's what he took from the Nimbarka Sampradaya. And that's how this sect started, which is called as Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So that is the synthesis between us and Madhvacharya. So we'll stop the class here. There's a lot more to say, but it's already time up. Are there any questions or comments or corrections?
Thank you for your class, Mataji. But it's just a kind of question for regarding to the text today. When we were reading the translation, it's quite interesting the way I was presented the connection or the relationship between the first example. He said, I will appear myself, the woman of Mandali, who is the wife of Navi, who is the son of Navi,
Agnidra.
So that was quite striking to me, how the emphasis in those connections and relationships. And in our part of my, well, like everybody will learn that those upadis, we need to gradually get rid of those upadis, because actually it's temporary and things like that. And this time it's the Lord Himself is emphasizing those aspects. So it was like understand how we can relate this and what would be the use. Do you think one explanation can be that the upadis is not wrong, but if it's connected with the Lord, it's a glorification of the devotee in this case. So the Lord Himself is glorifying His devotee, so in that sense, emphasizing this connection because we are related to Him. Is that okay?
Yes, Madhuri, I think that is the right understanding. Because if we see even when Srila Prabhupada was there, and it's very important, like you said, we are trying to give up false upadhis in this material world because that can keep us bound in this world. Like once when Prabhupada was visiting one of the life members in Bombay at that time, and he had taken obviously all some of his disciples, his Western disciples with him, and that life member was an Indian family in Bombay, and the head of the family kept calling everybody, this is my wife, this is my son, this is my grandson. He was an elderly gentleman. And then Prabhupada told his disciples, like when he got a private moment, he said he's just boasting about his sex life.
Yeah.
So obviously false upadhis we definitely want to get rid of, because they can keep us bound, my family, my children, my grandchildren, sister, brother, auntie, uncle, whatever, that can keep us bound, and we can keep appearing in that same family if we are very attached to that particular family. But like you yourself have explained, Mataji, but the true upadhis that we are connected with, those we do want to propagate, because those connections are actually reminding us of the Lord. So if we see, Prabhupada never used to talk about his family or anything like that, but he was very proud to be connected. Every time he used to say, my Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he was very proud to talk about that connection which he had with his Guru Maharaj. But you know, he was not talking about, oh, this is my son, this is my daughter and all that. We hardly see Prabhupada speaking about that particular connection.
Mm-hmm.
So like you rightfully explained here, because these are all exalted personalities. We learned about even Maharaj Agnidra in the previous chapter. There was a detailed chapter on him. And how Meru Devis and King Nabi is also so exalted. So that is how, you know, the right upadhis in the world we definitely want to keep and we want to associate. So if, you know, I am the disciple of so and so Guru, I don't want to proclaim and, you know, like propagate that, but I'm very proud of that connection because he's connecting me in the right way to Krishna.
Mm-hmm. I was listening and lecture when we said that the speaker was pointing out that the devotees are always engaged in glorifying the Lord, chanting, praising the activities of the Lord. But what Krishna Maharaj are doing more is that they are engaged in praising the devotees. And so how many devotees are so unlimited advanced spiritual devotees, so they are engaged in praising their devotees. So I was trying to relate in this case, is the Lord who is now praising his devotees, and for that reason is emphasizing this connection.
Yes, Mataji. And that is what I was, you know, just meditating on Ramchandra Vijayotsam, Vijayadashmi, which is today Dashera, the conquering of Lord Ram of over Ravana. And at that time I was hearing in one lecture where, you know, one of the themes of this particular festival is that the Lord, like obviously it's the victory of good over evil, that is the main thing we learn about Dashera, like the 10 evil qualities inside us, which represent the 10 heads of Ravana. We should allow the Lord to kill those 10 qualities, allow Him to take control of our heart and kill those qualities, bad qualities which are inside us. But one more main lesson which, you know, I was listening in that lecture was that the Lord likes to give credit to others. So the Lord Ram, He is omnipotent, omniscient, He knows everything. But still, like an ordinary person, He is asking everyone, where is Sita, where is Sita? He had to take help from Hanuman to find out where is Sita. So, you know, again the speaker was saying that the Lord is just wanting to give credit to His devotees. He can very easily, He knows where Sita is. Do you think the Lord doesn't know where Sita is? But He's going around searching, where is my Sita, where is my Sita? And then Hanuman had to jump, and you know, the whole monkey army searched for Sita. Then Hanuman went to Lanka and brought news back of Sita. Similarly, when the Lord is, you know, wanting to, once they discover they want to cross the ocean, again He's wondering, how do I cross this ocean? Now, you know, the Lord is the controller of the ocean. Doesn't He know how to cross the ocean? And then, you know, somebody had to tell Him, why don't you sit and pray to the ocean God, and He will then give you a way to cross Him. So over there also we see how the Lord is showing dependence on His devotees, and He's always wanting to give credit to His devotees. Even the bridge that was built, He allowed the monkeys to build that particular bridge for Him. Even the killing, like, you know, He was killing, keeping on cutting off Ravana's heads, but they were keeping on growing back. And He was thinking what to do, He's not getting killed at all. And then Vibhishan had to tell him the secret which Agastya Muni had also told him, that in the heart of Ravana there is that nectar. You have to, you know, shoot an arrow and kill that nectar, then only you get him. So again, you know, always taking advice from others and giving, allowing them to have that credit of advising the Lord on what to do. So that is the whole mood of, you know, our Lord. He likes to give credit to his devotees. Whereas in the material world, it's the opposite mood which conditioned jivas have. We always want credit for what we have done, or of what we have not done as well. We would like to get credit of things which we haven't done, and blame we would like to give to somebody else. But the Lord has completely opposite mood, which is something which, you know, Dashera or this Ramchandra Vijayotsam teaches us, how to align ourselves also with that mood where we are always giving credit to others. Even though we think we have done it, where, you know, we are actually not the doer, the Lord is the doer. So very nice realization. Thank you, Madhuri.
Thank you,
Madhavi. Thank you for narrating beautifully pastimes of Madhvacharya. So regarding the Gopichandan Madhvacharya picked up from this ship, I understand that inside Gopichandan there were two deities.
Yes.
One of them was
Balarama,
that is installed first, and then...
Yes, so that whole pastime is there. I didn't go into too much details because we are running short of time. But first the deity of Balaram, you know, came out and he established a temple right on the beach, and then he carried the Krishna deity inside and he established the Krishna temple. Okay, we'll end the class here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.